Welcome to SCI Science Perspectives, a podcast brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. In this podcast, we'll be discussing emerging literature spanning the full spectrum of SCI research, from discovery to clinical application. You're listening to a Scholarly Perspectives episode with Dr. Anna Bloom and Dr. Adam Stein. I'm one of your hosts, Marla.
And I'm David. Today, we'll be discussing the paper titled Experiences and Recommendations from People with Spinal Cord Injury Following Participation in a Disability Education Session at an Allopathic Medical School, a Qualitative Study, published in 2023 in the journal Spinal Cord Series and Cases. This paper was suggested to us by Asia's Outreach Committee. Our guests today are Dr. Anna Bloom and Dr. Adam Stein. Dr. Bloom established and directs the Lab of Spinal Cord Injury Research at the Feinstein Institutes, the research entity of Northwell Health. She is a professor in the Departments of Molecular Medicine and Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation, where she is the director of research at the Affiliate Medical School, the Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell. For 15 years, she has studied systemic inflammation and impaired immune system function in persons with traumatic spinal cord injury. She's published over 65 peer-reviewed manuscripts describing impacts of SCI on the immune system. And Dr. Stein is the founding chairman of the Department of PM&R at Zucker School of Medicine at Hofstra Northwell, former president of the Association of Academic Physiatrists, a former member of the board of directors of the American Spinal Injury Association, which produced this podcast, and a long-term spinal cord injury certified clinician. Northwell Health System includes three acute inpatient rehabilitation units that have a total of 122 beds and two large subacute rehabilitation facilities. Over several decades, Dr. Stein has built a large SCI outpatient practice and treated many patients for a variable number of years, including a small number for over 30 years. He regularly receives referrals of persons with SCI who live on Long Island and in the NYC metropolitan area, the Department of PM&R main outpatient clinic in Manhasset, where his main outpatient clinical practice office is located, has six wheelchair-accessible rooms and a wheelchair-accessible bathroom. A second site in Suffolk County has five wheelchair-accessible rooms and accessible restroom. Both locations have wheelchair-accessible scales. This can help our audience understand how serious these doctors are taking disability and access. For more than 15 years, Dr. Bloom and Dr. Stein have collaborated on studies in individuals with acute and chronic SCI, which have led to continuous external grant funding, multiple publications in peer-reviewed journals, and abstract patient presentations at national and international meetings. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Bloom and Dr. Stein. Excited to talk about your paper.
Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, really appreciate it. Glad to be with you.
All right. So from the get-go here, maybe we can set the stage by zooming out and from a larger medical education or for our professional leaders, med-ed, if you hear me use that term, perspective. What is the role that disability has played in med-ed? I mean, all of these medical students will be treating people who are likely going to develop some type of chronic disability. So what is the role of disability in the larger med-ed kind of development?
Well, I think it's pretty well documented that disability education in American medical schools has been lacking, underrepresented, but probably improving. Our initiative that led to this paper really came from a desire to bring into a new medical school curriculum some disability education that would inform the practice of all of our graduates, not just those practicing PM&R or not just those practicing spinal cord medicine.
Yeah, and on spinal cord injury, zooming in from disability to spinal cord injury as a teaching opportunity for medical education and disability, do you think there's anything particularly well-suited about spinal cord injury, like regardless of a med student's coming discipline, that is a good teaching tool?
Yeah, I chose, actually, one of the critiques from our medical students is that they, many of them had responded about why we didn't choose to focus on a wider range of disabilities. But I chose to focus on people with spinal cord injury because they have many complex medical needs, and that would require that as they had visits with a primary care physician or a specialist, that they be aware of these needs. So I felt that spinal cord injury was a really good model for this because of their extensive medical needs, respiratory, bowel, bladder, cardiovascular, as you know. So.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that's part of the education of spinal cord injury is we're talking about every system of the body. And part of the reason why the diagnosis is so unique. And then, you know, one of the other things that stuck out was deciding to teach at the level of the medical student in medical school. You know, I think we can all agree one thing, medical students are very busy and they're probably all very stressed. And so I was wondering, you know, why did you guys decide to do that at the level of the medical student versus, you know, an intern or resident, or versus at like the college level? Did you find any, was there any particular reason why you chose that level?
Well, I think we were thinking about the earlier the better. Obviously, you know, we had no, you know, we work for a medical school, we had no ability to affect, you know, college education, but we just felt that we wanted to provide information that any clinical practitioner could utilize when a person with a disability sought their services. Again, whether primary care, whether specialty care. We know that people with disabilities have, there are so many challenges. Lisa Iazzoni wrote a paper a couple of years ago that anonymously interviewed a large number of physicians across the United States. And when they were given their anonymity, they were pretty open about how uncomfortable they were in treating people with disabilities. And so that, I think, informs why we wanted to do this and reach at the medical student level. We felt that the resident level was too late.
Yeah, that makes good sense to me. And I think that the structure, the way that you formatted this teaching engagement might lend itself to that level. So if we can zoom in now a little bit on the format, paper outlines really clearly the course goals, which there were three of, the learning objectives, which there are seven. So interested listeners should go and take a look there. But when it comes to the topic of this paper in particular, you asked the people with spinal cord injuries who engaged in the teaching session about what they thought about the teaching session. And so from a kind of provocative standpoint, like these aren't medical professionals, these aren't going to be, you know, the medical providers. So what is the research question in asking these people what they thought about the session?
Sure. So Dr. Bloom, I think I can answer that on our behalf. So, you know, in research, there's a big movement to help researchers better understand the questions that are important to people with spinal cord injury and to, in, you know, understand that these are actually the experts because they're living with the condition and the lived experience is, you know, the most informed. And so incorporating that into this educational experience is sort of where we were coming from. So we wanted to get feedback from the participants with spinal cord injury who were in both the large group session where Dr. Stein talks about general principles of treating people with disabilities. And then they go into a small group format with usually 8 to 12 medical students, and they participate in a rolling role play exercise where they're supposed to present as a first encounter with a new physician. And the students are supposed to participate in taking a physical and history and getting to know the patient and understanding their goals. Why are they there? What's going on? And it was really insightful to hear what recommendations and experiences the people with spinal cord injury who were the model patients, quote unquote, had for us. And many of these folks have been participating for multiple years in the class. So they've seen different cohorts of students and been mixed with different groups of students. And it was very interesting to hear some of their recommendations.
Yeah. And if I remember here, I'm looking through the paper, the number of years this program started in 2013, is that correct?
Our medical school opened in 2011, and so the first time we had a second year class at this point in the curriculum was 2013, and we've done it ever since.
Yeah, which is absolutely fantastic. When it Dr. Bloom, you said that these are the model patients, they are the experts. I think the most important perspective or the important, standpoint that they come from is they're the end users of the medicine, right? So even though they won't be the providers, them educating on what they want to receive from the providers, I think is just the most important aspect of this paper.
Yes,
So
and
mega.
in many other educational settings, they are standardized patients. They're not necessarily people with lived experience. They might be actors or volunteers from the community. And for people with spinal cord injury, it's very hard if you haven't lived with that condition to understand all of the complexity that they live with, not only in medical conditions, but also accessing medical care. So that's why I think, Dr. Stein's choice in particular to focus on this population was so informative for the students.
Yeah, I think that as Dr. Bloom said, actually, in the in the so our medical school has a very the curriculum is focused on active learning. So we do tons and tons of things in small groups where our students practice the skills that they're going to utilize throughout their careers. This one is different because it actually uses the actual patients rather than either actors or even the small group facilitators often play the roles of the patients. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so impactful.
Yeah, I could certainly recall, going through the actors and everything when we were going through medical school. But I think you make such a good distinction there about some of the unique aspects of spinal cord injury. You can probably get an actor to show, I've got a rash or, my stomach hurts or something like that. But it's quite different when you're talking about the full spectrum of actually living with a spinal cord injury. So I think it makes not only the condition obviously unique, but the education regarding it unique. Kind of going off of that, can you talk a little bit more about the active learning piece? You had mentioned when we were talking offline that there was actually a previous publication regarding the same topic about the students' feedback. Can you talk about how that may have impacted how you guys designed this class or how it may have changed the class over time?
Well, we so the yeah the paper that I alluded to was published in 2019 in the American Journal of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation called "Caring for Patients with Physical Disabilities: Assessment of an Innovative Spinal Cord Injury Session That Addresses an Educational Gap." And one of the things we haven't discussed yet is that it's for the students who went through this experience during the course of their assessment period, where they are tested with regards to everything they've learned in the context of the course in which this is embedded, that we had material from this curriculum involved in that. So we had actually a chance to see if the students were able to incorporate some of the learning points from this session. We found that they generally did. They were asked really to do three things. One is they, in an essay question, they were asked to name two activities of daily living and two instrumental activities of daily living. Then, in a standardized patient experience, they were actually essentially replayed what they had done in the class. They assessed a new patient, and in that case, I will tell you the new patient was portrayed by a standardized patient, not somebody with a real disability. And they were assessed as to skills and attitudes that they demonstrated during that assessment. And then the third thing was more of a qualitative approach as to qualitative questions as to feedback on their experience. That's where we got some of the information about, maybe be better to not have all spinal cord patients, have some stroke patients, have some other types of disabilities represented. But that was more, that wasn't really part of their assessment, but that was just sort of a survey to see how they found the experience. So that was the first paper was really from the student, the learner's perspective, and then the second paper was from the participant, the patients who helped us so much with these sessions, their perspective.
Fantastic. So on the participant perspective, if we can now move on to talking about the results, I think really exciting would be to get your thoughts on the feasibility of implementing some of the suggestions that arise from the four large themes that come from the thematic analysis of the qualitative interview. And as like one example, a participant suggested to have a longer role-playing session and to shorten the lecture in response. That's a really practical kind of suggestion that comes from the study. So what do you think is a feasible kind of actionable follow-on from these findings?
So we certainly have, as you mentioned, we have done this now for about 13 years. So we have changed slightly some of the aspects of the course. We've changed the pre-work over time. That's another characteristic of our medical school. There's always pre-work, which the students are expected to do. And we try to not make that too onerous, but they are expected to do that. And initially, when we started this course, we did have a bit of physical exam included. We asked the students to take vital signs. We subsequently removed that aspect because it didn't work so great for paraplegics because it was like taking vital signs on anybody else. So if we instead of doing an actual portion of a physical exam, we talked through difficult or challenging parts of the exam and how you might do, an abdominal exam for someone in a wheelchair or, a skin assessment, things like that. So the course has call it a course, but the session has changed somewhat over the years.
And in particular to this study, based on the findings, feedback from those participants that have spinal cord injuries, do you have anything in specifically you think you will change going forward in the course? Sorry, session.
Well, we did try to lengthen the small group portion of this and give the students more time to play the role of the provider, and so basically the introductory lecture, I won't even call it a lecture now, I'll just call it a framing session. In that we have three of the patients just talk a little bit about not their medical care, but talk about sort of their injury and what they're doing with their lives now. And that's actually usually a great way to start. And then I go over for really no more than 10 minutes, some data with regard to how common is disability, difficulties with access, for people with disabilities in general, et cetera. And so we keep that now to about 10 to 15 minutes, which leaves the rest of a 2-hour session to do the actual rolling role play. I'll also say that, for every course, every session that we do, there is a faculty pre-meeting, because we have a lot of faculty participating in this. And most of the sessions have both a facilitator who is one of the core faculty of the School of Medicine, and then we have a content expert. And for this, the content experts are physiatrists, psychologists, physical therapists, occupational therapists, which, by the way, I think is another strength of this session, that we show we really demonstrate interprofessional care. And that, I think it's really interesting when a medical student sees how much an occupational therapist knows about the medical aspects of spinal cord injury. But that faculty pre-meeting to get everybody on the same page, to go over the goals for the session, and to try to anticipate challenges during the session is really important.
Any like particular feedback from the participants, the people living with spinal cord injury that really stuck out to you? Anything memorable, one way or the other?
Absolutely. I mean, there were so many vignettes, and each year is different because you're with a different group of people and a different person with SCI. But I think it's very impactful for the students to hear directly from someone, for example, that they should only speak to them when they come into a room and not to their caregiver, and how often that's an experience that they have, and how important it is even to ask. Do you want this person to stay, or should we have some time alone in the exam room? And that's can be a difficult thing for a person with spinal cord injury to ask the caregiver to leave, because it almost might seem like a rejection of that person who they're have a lot of time with during the day, for example. There were lots of examples of bad encounters with physicians that would unfortunately make your hair stand on end. Somebody who walked into the room unprepared and said to the person, can you stand up for me? And asking a person with spinal cord injury to do that is obviously completely inappropriate. Or saying, do you have cerebral palsy? That was another example. It's we've all had bad physician encounters, but those are extremely bad, I would say. And the students were really listening and paying attention. They were also very interested in terms of social participation and instrumental activities of daily living. All of the adaptive equipment, whether it's driving or other types of accessibility aids that they really had no idea existed. And so I think they wanted to learn more about that. And I will say, with Dr. Stein mentioning the facilitator versus the content expert, some of the facilitators were very comfortable talking about topics with the students that the students might feel awkward about. So, ask somebody about their sexual activity, ask somebody about their intimacy, relationships, et cetera. And some of the other facilitators were less comfortable with it, just like you would find in everyday clinical practice. So it was interesting as a content expert, as that's our role from the Department of PM&R, to give little prompts and say, you know what you might want to talk about with this person that hasn't come up yet, and things would come out from those comments. But another thing that I just wanted to point out, it's from Dr. Stein's previous paper where they surveyed students. Many of the comments and the themes that came out of that study were also reflected from the participants with SCI. So everybody wanted more time together, which I think is a great sign of success, rather than saying we'd really like to spend less time with in this class, And everybody mentioned that it might be interesting to repeat it as the students mature in their education, because they understood that they were entry level, MS2 students, and they might appreciate also getting a chance to have another go at it, when they had sort of been in clinic. And this is in their preclinical years. So there were lots of interesting topics.
Yeah, I'll mention again, one of the interesting things about our medical school is that though this occurs in their preclinical years, our students are from the first week of medical school in clinical settings. They start off the first course as MS1s. They are riding ambulances, and every student becomes a certified EMT. And then they start going into doctor's offices. So, though it's in the preclinical years, this is stuff that they are doing on a regular basis. And one of the things we always ask is, so what are you seeing in your ambulatory office space vis-a-vis, this topic? One of the other things I wanted to mention is that on that it, from the first paper, when we looked at whether the students asked about key topics for people with spinal cord injury, we found that half asked about skin. We found that about three quarters asked about bowel and bladder, but 97% of our students asked about sexuality. So that was I guess we made that point that these are indeed sexual beings and drove that home.
Well, I think you guys hit on a lot of the, a lot of the crossover topics that aren't just necessarily important when you're treating someone with a disability, but, you know, being prepared for patient encounters, respect for the person that you're seeing, and, you know, patient-centered care, making sure, you know, when you were talking about talking to the caregiver instead of the person directly in front of you, kind of reminded me of when we were first taught to use translator services, and people will talk to the translator instead of talking to the person. And so a lot of those lessons can really, you know, go through to just your, you know, every single patient encounter that you have. So those are, you know, really important points. You know, one of the things I was thinking as you guys were talking was, you know, say I'm a professor, I'm listening to this episode, and now you've got me motivated. I want to bring this into my program now. You know, this is obviously vital, you know, education. Any tips or tricks from your 13 years of running this that you guys would give to somebody that comes to you that might want to institute something similar?
I think my tip would be that you have to know your medical school's curriculum and look for places where you could place this in the curriculum. So we have this placed in a course called The Human Condition, yes. And that deals with aspects of neurology and orthopedics and rheumatology and musculoskeletal medicine. So they have this session while they're also learning about the anatomy of the spinal cord. And they may have, you know, other things. So it's really an integrated curriculum. So I think that that's what I would advise somebody to do: learn their curriculum and look for places where something like this could be integrated. And it might not be the same thing, same time, or same course for everyone.
What about you, Dr. Bloom? Any tips and tricks from your side of things?
Well, I do think that, you know, It's not an accident that we have a spinal cord injury physician leading this course, and he was able to recruit people from the community who he has a long-standing relationship with, who were willing and generously willing to donate their time. I mean, it's, you know, we're in a suburban setting. It's not easy transportation, although there's not easy transportation anywhere, but you know, these people are making a real commitment to come and spend time with the students and to be really open with them. So I think having a local community advisory board or group of participants who are going to give their input and be buy-in from the get-go is super important. And I would say also, I want to give a shout out to our colleague, Renee Peck-Mazaret, who was the first author on this article, for introducing us really to the qualitative method of focus groups and to incorporating community participation in not only traditional biomedical research studies, but in educational efforts as well, because that really taught me a lot about how to get to, you know, how to improve classes and get to the first person experience and see how we can share that directly with the medical students.
Yeah, as an example, there are 7 of the 8 participants in this study were power wheelchair users, which is just a tiny little intro into a portal that their disability is pretty profound, right?
Trying to bring a diverse group of spinal cord patients. So I you know, we have men and women, we have people with cervical injuries and thoracic injuries, complete and incomplete, people of color and white, people with, you know, other serious socioeconomic challenges, and people who've been quite fortunate. So really is a very, you know, depending on who you might meet, you're going to have a different experience. I will say that the patients are instructed, they're not playing the same role, they are playing themselves. So they're starting a new relationship with a new primary caregiver, and they provide their own medical information. So
the other thing I'll just add is that in the focus group article, you know, we ask people to participate after spending half a day with the students. So it wasn't necessarily inclusive of all the people who with SCI who participated in the session. These just happened to be the folks who were available at that day. And we didn't record any reasons that people declined. You know, it was a long day and you just didn't even think of it, actually. It would have been interesting to find out, you know, if they had a particular reason not to stay.
Yeah, and for our listeners, if you're listening to this, you're motivated. You really want to try and start one of these, you know, the med school near you, or maybe you're alum. I do know that there are funding for programs such as this. The Craig Nielsen Foundation, just as one example, does fund a program at Florida International with Dr. Susan Solman. So shout out to that. And for Drs. Blum and Stein, are there any other programs you know of that you think are great that are doing something like this that you want to highlight? This is such an important call to action.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't know personally. When we were writing the introduction for this article, there were many papers saying that only 50% of medical schools have any instruction for caring for people with disabilities. And most of those courses are either a lecture by someone, you know, a physician, or sometimes by a caregiver. But there was very little discussion of having people with disabilities actually incorporated into classes like this. So it's, I'm sure it's not unique, but it's definitely a great example of what can be done in a very practical way.
I guess my own sort of entry into this type of thing was, I was part, I used to work at another medical school prior to this, and I was part of a curriculum redesign in 2000. And I got involved in the first course of the MS1 year, and that first session of that first course, which was the doctoring course, was called the Experience of Illness. And so the point there was to try to help the learners, help our medical students come to appreciate what people with all sorts of medical conditions, this was not disability specific, go through, not just in experiencing the illness, but experiencing the trying to get care for that illness and accessing the medical system, which is such a challenge, and more so for people with disabilities.
Yeah, and so we're so happy to help champion the program you've built that is, you know, now evidence-based with multiple papers, and also just really want to shout out to our professional, our colleagues. Hey, let's bring this to MedEd at a med school near you. So
thank you guys both so much for being here and for sharing your experience with us. And we encourage everyone to check out both of those articles. Thanks again.
Thank you. And I'm sure anybody can contact us. We have contact information on the papers, and we'd be happy to chat with anyone who's interested in this topic.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCI Science Perspectives, brought to you by the American Spinal Injury Association. The topic discussed in this episode was chosen by our outreach committee. The podcast is made possible by the leadership of Drs. Suzanne Groh and Susie Charlefieux, your producer hosts David McMillan, that's me, and Marla Petrello, our editor and production assistant Abby Fox, and Asia's front office.